Support for Almost Entirely Sports is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. And Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Here's what we can do for you. We have an exclusive offer for listeners to Almost Entirely Sports. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code ALMOST on any order at manscaped.com. That's an incredible deal for an incredible product. Listen, over the course of our future, maybe we'll get into more or less detail whenever talking about our experience with Manscaped, but I can tell you firsthand, they hooked us up. They sent out a box for me and Beards and Rudy, and apparently Beards this whole time was a Manscaped user and never told us, which has just really brought on more questions than answers at this point. But I have now used the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, and everything in their Perfect Package 3.0 is absolutely unbelievable. Everything the ads say have been 100% true. It truly is a best-in-class grooming experience. You can support the show and get a great product from Manscaped, really supporting yourself, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of double entendres throughout this read. I don't know if you caught that or not. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code ALMOST. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I hate Nick Bolton, and I hate him because he's a Missouri Tiger.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I hate Nick Bolton.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I gotta delete that file from the system. I can't keep having that happen. I cannot deal with that. Especially in a moment like this. I was gonna say going back to the good old days, but that's not exactly true for a reason I'll explain momentarily. I am so very happy to say that Craig Stout, now of the KC Sports Network, a new project that if you're on Twitter at all, you've almost certainly seen, and if not, we'll let Craig give us some of the details. Craig Stout joins us here on Almost Entirely Sports. You can follow him on Twitter, at Barley Hop. You can follow at KC Sports Network as well. I will also give you this detail. The last time that Craig Stout was on with us, this show was on ESPN Kansas City instead of being on Sports Radio 810, and I have the hour of the podcast in front of me. Here is the title of the hour of the podcast. Craig Stout makes us optimistic about Breland Speaks.
Oh boy.
Craig, do you think you can top that today?
Listen, when you come in with fire takes, like being optimistic about Breland Speaks, I understand a 3-year ban from this radio station. Like, I get it. I understand why that all happened. And I did want to come back and just kind of update you guys. Didn't work out, guys. I don't know if you saw the news, but it didn't necessarily work out that way. Yeah, it's great to be back. It's good to be on here with you, Josh. I mean, we're reunited, and it feels so good. Yes, let's do this.
It's also really generous of you to, in your first 2 minutes back on the show, to create your own liner that will be here for you next time. Oh, it just could not have been executed more perfectly. And yeah, I do think you've served your time with the Breland Speaks take in the rear view.
I don't know, that was pretty bad.
I think we just got, we're like, you're on probation still for sure. Like, I don't know where you're going to take us on Josh Kando later, but if you end up being loud wrong on him, we may have to look at a couple more years.
Hey, at least Josh Kando was taken in day 3.
Yes.
I could be wrong about him. So
absolutely.
Being wrong about the second rounder, that stings a little bit.
Here's the thing. You were not anywhere near the most wrong person in Kansas City about him, like, including every single person in the Chiefs organization. I mean, I think we all, you know, I think most of us generally want to be at least a little optimistic about the new Chiefs. Like, it's just sort of, it's nicer that way. Being a hater isn't nearly as fun as everybody on Twitter accuses me of it being. And you know, it feels good to be rooting for the Chiefs' new picks. We all got hit with a little Breland Speaks shrapnel at some point.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I'm just curious here. I heard the intro bumper there about you hating Nick Bolton. Are we sure that we're all optimistic about the Chiefs?
I hate Nick Bolton, and I hate him because he's a Missouri Tiger.
Why did you do it again, Rudy? I thought that I heard that correctly. Yeah, you did, and I'm gonna say that there was some selective editing.
Between
Rudy and Beards, I've been taken out of context for the sake of a liner zero times over the last 5 years or whatever. It's absolutely never happened. And that wasn't the first time. Yeah, no, I hate him personally. It's because he's a Tiger. I obviously hate Mizzou for some reason I haven't yet found, but it's in my heart, you know, I can tell. I hate all linebackers. I hate all defensive players. I hate anyone who's not Patrick Mahomes. It's probably going to get edited into me saying I hate Patrick Mahomes, which I also don't want to happen, but...
Right. I like that you hate all defensive players, though, because, I mean, like, you brought me on here.
Right.
The guy who wants to only talk about defense. So this is going to be a blast.
If you ask other people who and what I hate, you'll end up with a much longer list than I would have thought to have provided. But that, you know, that comes the territory, I guess. Before we get into all of these wonderful defensive players and all sorts of fun and just exciting things to talk about, because you're back, baby. It feels so good. But tell everybody a little bit about KC Sports Network. Maybe some people who haven't heard about it yet. I don't know. I don't think anybody from the network has been on the show since the announcement. We talked to Matt Derrick the day before, and he gave me absolutely no hint, so he kept it locked down. But now it's all out there in the open. Tell me a little bit about the network and what you guys are building over there.
Yeah, KC Sports Network, it's a group of three of us that worked at Arrowhead Pride previous to this. You know, we still love Arrowhead Pride and all that. Nothing but love for that organization. But me, Ken Swanson, Matt Lane, joined together with BJ Kissel, Nick Leckie, Jeff Allen, and Mike DeVito, and then also, we landed Matt Derrick right at the very end to be a beat writer here. So we've got this group of people that we are putting together to talk about the Chiefs. There's going to be a free podcast network. All of those people are going to be on the free podcast network. We're going to give you daily podcasts for that. We are also going to have daily newsletters via Substack that we are going to give you. You can sign up for free right now and get a taste of some of what we're doing there. But the goal is basically to have this group of people giving a unique insight, because it's a bunch of people that have been writing about the Chiefs from an X's and O's perspective for a long time, a bunch of players that have played under Andy Reid, and getting together all these minds and trying to come up with something that can educate and inform while still being kind of fun. You know, we're trying to help everybody be a little smarter football fan for the Chiefs, because, you know, you're living in the golden era of Chiefs football. We should appreciate it on every level that we can. So that's the goal. That's what we're doing. And KC Sports Network is the home of it. KCSportsNetwork.com. If you go there, you can get literally everything that we've got via links and see our cool, you know, logos and everything like that that we're about to put on merch. And I'm only going to wear that from here on out. Like, that's going to exclusively be my wardrobe. So that's the elevator pitch for it. But please go sign up, subscribe to everything, and you'll kind of get a good idea of what's coming. We're going to slow roll it up. July 1st is going to be the big day that everything's going to kick off, and you're going to be getting daily stuff for you on July 1st.
I'm really excited for you guys. I'm really excited to see what you do as well. But everybody so far seems really jazzed about it, and I'm very happy for you guys to have all of this energy, all pointing in the same direction, stuff that you guys all feel like you've got your ownership of and everything. It's a great deal for you guys, and I have no doubt at all that this may be heretical on some level. So if it is, I really don't mean this as any slight to anybody prior, but you say we're living in the golden era of Chiefs football, and I thought you were going to say the golden era of Chiefs coverage, because I also think that's true. Again, if that cuts out somebody from years past, maybe we're making up for it with volume now, but there's so much good stuff out there, and the fact that you guys are coming together to do it is also really exciting.
Absolutely. There's room for everybody. I mean, that's the thing. Nobody's out here trying to elbow anybody out. There's room for everybody. Everybody's got their own voice and their own approach, and it's awesome that we are living in this era of both Chiefs coverage and Chiefs football, because it's nice when the team is good and the people covering it are good as well.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. So let's talk about some of it then. I'll start with Nick Bolton, because let me give you my actual take, and then you can tell me where I'm being an idiot. I was not thrilled at, you know, draft announcement time. I wasn't apoplectic. This is not a pick that's going to get me tased, so I'm already doing better than I was last year at this time. But
small baby steps.
Baby steps, man. We got to take the wins where we can get them, and even a neutral at this point is kind of a dub. But I'm a little lukewarm, because we're now looking at 2 years in a row spending a second round pick on linebackers, very different players, and that'll play different positions, different roles. I get that, but it's spending a lot at the linebacker position after also spending a lot financially on Anthony Hitchens, and on a guy that I think it seems like he's really here to be the Anthony Hitchens replacement, probably starting after this upcoming season. And if he can be a little upgrade and also do it more cheaply, there's absolutely value in that. I think for me, it may also come back to the fact that I really thought they were going to end up spending one of these two picks on a receiver, and also I'm more excited about Creed Humphrey than I am Nick Bolton. None of my things are really an indictment on Nick Bolton, the football player. I think it's a lot of the sort of extenuating circumstances that have me being a little lukewarm. Where are you at on the Bolton pick, kind of in the 30,000 foot view, and then we can get into a few specifics?
I think that's accurate. Like, I do think that there are enough things individually outside of Nick Bolton himself that people have question marks, and myself included. Now, that being said, I was very high on Nick Bolton. I have a lot of the same concerns that everybody else has, but I was very high on Nick Bolton. And as you spoke there about him, you know, maybe being the future Mike, taking over for Anthony Hitchens, getting a little cheaper there, I do believe that that is the full plan. And if that's the case, it's hard to argue with being able to find a Mike linebacker in a Steve Spagnuolo defense. And I want to make sure that I say the Steve Spagnuolo part of that, because a lot of other defenses, they're not necessarily relied on as much. It's not necessarily a thumper, you know, call all the fronts roles. Lots of guys can handle that in varying defenses and stuff like that. Steve Spagnuolo needs his guy. We have seen Anthony Hitchens, when he has missed time over the past 2 years, kind of the glue to the defense dissolve a little bit. And you've seen some cracks in the run game, in the pass game, people not being on the same page. Now all of a sudden you've got somebody with that continuity. You've got a backup, a true backup Mike that you can trust to do all those things. And I do think that his career arc has a higher ceiling than Anthony Hitchens. So when you look at it under that lens as a future Mike for Spagnuolo, I do think that it makes a ton of sense, because I don't know that you are able to find those guys later, you know, later on in the draft, because they get caught up, you know, early third and things like that. That's when a lot of those guys go. So I do think the value is appropriate for that, even though I'm not sure if he can cover particularly well.
Right. So I want to start with the thing that you just said that's new to my ears that I think is really interesting, that there is more value to that position in a Spags defense than in the rest of the NFL as a whole. Because I actually, like, that makes sense. You say, you know what, maybe we're spending a little higher pick than we'd love to or whatever on a guy that's not going to be making an immediate impact or as big an immediate impact as you might hope for from the 58th overall pick, because he's more valuable in the future than you would initially give him credit for. I think that's really interesting. I do also wonder how this is also, I don't want to turn this into Josh questions Steve Spagnuolo, because that's a losing side that I do not want a part of. But it's kind of interesting that Spags has so many sort of specific things, it seems like. Like, there is an edge prototype, and they went and got Frank Clark so Spags could have a Spags end. And this pick for Josh Kando is a Spags defensive end. And they've gotten a lot of safeties because the Spags defense is thriving on great safety play, which also means you can apparently, I didn't see this coming, but you can apparently get away with cheaper and lesser investments in the cornerback position, which made me really uncomfortable all the way up until it didn't anymore, because apparently Spags knows what he's doing. But what is all of that doing for Spags? Say that again.
I said, to be clear, I'm not even there yet with
right.
the cornerback thing. Like, I'm still not comfortable with
yeah.
that. But I do think that Steve Spagnuolo And this is not to say that he's not adaptable, because he certainly is. We know that to be the case. You know, he has a very versatile coverage scheme. He throws a little bit of everything at everybody. I think the one key ingredient that you have to be to play for Steve Spagnuolo is smart. Mm. Like, you have to be smart, because he's going to throw, you know, 12 different things at you on a given play, and you've got to read it quickly, you've got to react quickly, and you've got to go with that. So that means a lot of these positions where you can get by with maybe a little less athleticism. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say, defensive end, where you can play a power run kind of guy and go through the tackle a little more. Or linebacker, where you don't necessarily need to have ultra range. Or safety, where there's a market inefficiency in the NFL because mm-hmm. there are so many good safeties. Now, all of a sudden, Steve Spagnuolo targets those sorts of positions and finds these guys that fit his true prototype, because they're available. Yeah. And they're able to be gotten at the types of picks that the Chiefs are getting. Obviously, we all want Jalen Ramsey. We all want Devin Bush. We all want these guys that are ultra awesome at everything. Steve Spagnuolo does, too. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't pass on those types of guys, but they go top 10. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs are always going to be good, and so they're always going to be at the bottom of the, you know, every single round that they pick. So it makes it a lot easier for Spagnuolo to say, get me that linebacker, because he checks every single box for me, and I know that I can put him in this hole and that our defense got better.
You use one of my absolute favorite phrases to just beaten to the ground, which is market inefficiencies, where you find places to get those in a positive way. Maybe the result is that they pay a premium for a Mike linebacker in this defense. Do you think that's fair?
I think that that's fair. I mean, I do think that that's fair, because it does mean so much more. You value those sorts of things. In the same way that you value a left tackle to protect Patrick Mahomes, Steve Spagnuolo values that middle linebacker. Now, here's the problem. Good middle linebackers go for the same cost as, you know, good left tackles.
Right.
So it's a lot more palatable to make that move at the end of the second round, because then the value of it is just so much more. Now, again, this is just Steve Spagnuolo's defense. I'm just talking about that specifically, not the NFL as a whole, but right. I do think that he values it in that kind of way.
So tell me what you think the linebackers are going to look like in 2021, because it doesn't seem to me, as a person that knows less about defenses, linebackers, football, life, maybe, I don't know, than you do, but it doesn't seem to me like there's an easy, like, three puzzle pieces to snap into place between Hitchens and Bolton and Willie Gay and Ben Neiman. As this linebacker group comes together specifically for 2021, before we look down the line, where do you think those guys are going to fit in terms of, is Hitchens still going to be the Mike, which is where I'm leaning at this point, but, and then what happens at Sam and Will? Can Bolton, Veach mentioned that he thinks that Bolton can play at the Will, but the coverage concerns are obviously there. How do you see that most likely shaking out?
Well, it's going to, if we're just talking about the base defense there, obviously Hitchens is going to be the Mike. I do think that Bolton is going to play that Will linebacker role, because we've seen that be Damian Wilson. We've seen that be Ben Neiman. I mean, you know, 2 years ago when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, Damian Wilson was the Will linebacker with Reggie Ragland at the Sam.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that, you know, that everything, that Damian Wilson had to be an ultra good coverage linebacker by any means. It obviously helps. But I do think that they're going to put Bolton there just because Willie Gay is, you know, he's long, he's very dense, and I think he's going to fit that Sam role and the base better. My real question is going to be in the nickel. I think we're all slotting in Hitchens as the Mike and Willie Gay as that Buck or that backside linebacker. We'll see what happens there. Spagnuolo's fine with running out to bigger guys to play the run, so I could see Nick Bolton getting that nod over Willie Gay. I don't think that they're going to take Hitchens off the field in those roles. And then the dime linebacker role is Ben Neiman's. For right now, I know that a lot of Chiefs fans are going, ugh, right now. But if Willie Gay can get the playbook down, I do think that they've got high hopes for him as a coverage linebacker. So there is an avenue here where Willie Gay could play base downs and dime downs, but not those nickel downs. I'm going to be very curious, if we get to see training camp at all this year, to see what that nickel rotation is, because I think that's the key for what we'll see out of Bolton this year.
That's a good point, because I think they're in sub-packages like 70 or 75% of the time, and we end up talking about base stuff too often. So I'll certainly take that. What do you think that ends up looking like into the future? And I guess really what I'm doing there, because we don't have any more information right now, you don't get the pleasure of having a camp and a year of tape on these guys. But what I'm really anticipating is that in 2022 we're talking about a very similar group of guys minus Anthony Hitchens in all likelihood at this point. So how do you mm-hmm. think all of that could shift around if Hitchens is out of the picture next year?
I think Bolton goes like for like for Hitchens. Mm-hmm. I think he is the Mike linebacker in the base, in the nickel, and you see Nick Bolton and Willie Gay running those two spots. Obviously, you hope that Willie Gay picks up enough to where he's going to end up being a true three-down linebacker. He's going to play that Will role or the Sam role, depending on, you know, who they get to play in the base there, and he's going to play that Buck, and he will play the dime linebacker, and he will essentially get 100% of the Chiefs' defensive snaps, with Nick Bolton kind of taking that Anthony Hitchens role where he's on the field for roughly 80% of the snaps and coming off in the dime.
Which would be fun. If that all pans out that way, and we're now years mm-hmm. into the future, if everybody like hits their, not even hits their ceiling, if everybody is on the right side of their possible range of outcomes, that would be a whole lot of fun, because it's something you would never have to really worry about again that could end up developing into a strength. I don't know if you have a feel for how likely you think all of that is, or if that's just a best-case scenario, but I don't feel like I learned nearly as much about Willie Gay last year as I was hoping to, but maybe that changes this season.
I do think that this is a very important season for him. You know, coming in your rookie year and having a COVID offseason is rough. Yeah. Like, it really is rough. And Willie is the kind of guy that, you know, frankly, didn't get awesome, super awesome coaching. So he really kind of needed that buildup. I do think that year of being under Spagnuolo, that you started to see some stride. That injury at the end of the year really kind of robbed us of the important snaps that we got to see him, you know, kind of progress as a player. So I do have high hopes for him. I think that Nick Bolton's going to get on the field quick because he's a very high IQ guy. I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to trust him implicitly. So I'm not worried about him being on the field so much. It's just, can Willie Gay make enough of a stride where we get to see him in the dime? Because that's where the Chiefs really need a guy that can go out there and cover and play, you know, play with some athleticism, because frankly, they're missing that in the middle of the field.
Yeah, that's impossible, literally impossible to argue, I think, even on the internet. So let's talk about the other defensive guy from this class, and then we'll see where we end up. Josh Kando is very interesting to me. I'm going to do the thing that everyone has done and most people, I think, have done inaccurately, which is by invoking the names of both Breland Speaks, the aforementioned, and also Tano Passanio, because what everyone, I think, is doing, I think what a lot of fans are doing, totally reasonably, is going, oh, great, another developmental defensive end who needs something. What is that thing? Different for all of them. And obviously, they're all very different players with different traits and different skill sets and different needs and all of that. But also, Josh Kando was the 144th pick. He wasn't traded up for in the second round or just taken in the second round. It's a fourth round pick. It's not quite as stressful, but also I don't know what to make of him at this point because he seems like he has more question marks than anything at this point. So what are you feeling right now on Josh Kando and also even the choice to take him with that pick?
Yeah, I actually really like that swing because different from a Breland Speaks or a Tano Passanio, he was the number one defensive end recruit. Mm-hmm. Coming out of high school. I mean, Bama wanted him, Clemson wanted him, Baylor wanted him, and he went to Florida State, and that coaching staff has had so much upheaval, and you just didn't see any growth in his game from his freshman year to essentially his senior year. And there were some injuries in there for certain, especially at the end of his junior year, and you kind of saw that linger into his senior year a little bit. But he's not like those guys because he's an ultra-athletic guy that has all the tools. Like, he's already learned them. He's not having to learn a new position or, in Tano's case, having to learn football. You know, right. He just didn't have a whole lot of experience there. Joshua Kando knows all of that stuff. The reason that he fell to this point is because he just didn't develop as a player in college, like, at all. Marvin Wilson was another player along that Florida State offensive line or defensive line that went undrafted and went to the Senior Bowl and looked good, you know, at the Senior Bowl, just went undrafted, completely undrafted, because teams don't like to gamble on guys that haven't really shown any development. But it becomes very clear, you know, and I think you kind of heard those guys hint around it a little bit after they drafted Kando. Kind of became a little clear. It's like, listen, we're banking on the guy that came out of high school. And when you're drafting a guy like that in the fourth round, where, you know, obviously we all hope he's going to be L'Jarius Sneed or, you know, something to that effect, but more often than not, you don't hit on those picks in a big way. I'm more than happy to take a swing on a guy like that, because you're putting him in Brendan Daly's hands and saying, here's your raw lump of clay. Please do something with this. Oh, and by the way, he also knows pass rush moves. And he's a super athlete. So, I mean, it's not the same as those other guys, which I get why we'd be gun shy with all of that. But it is a fourth round pick. I think it's a more calculated risk than we've seen in the past.
So with all of that and accepting all of that, like what is it that still needs to come together? Because that's the only part where I sort of start getting hung up, because you say he's a physical freak who does have the tools, who does know some pass rush moves, who is also still something that can be developed, and whatever specifics you feel like you can like comfortably speak on, what is there for him to do? What are the first few steps that Spags and Brendan Daly need to take with him?
It's going to be play ID, figuring out what's happening on the field, reading pulling blockers, reading the offensive tackle sets. A lot of times, you know, guys like this that win with a lot of athleticism, you know, he's got the tools and he's got the pass rush toolbox, but he doesn't know how to use it. You know, he's decided pre-snap, I'm going to do this. You know, that's not always the case, obviously, but there's a lot of times where he's already made up his mind what he's going to do to try and beat the tackle, rather than reacting to what's happening on the field. And so that's the part that needs to develop just a little bit more here to get on the field. So that's not a small hurdle to overcome, to be clear. That's something that, especially for Steve Spagnuolo, you have to be able to know what's going on and be playing with everybody else. You know, if you've got 10 guys on the same page and one guy that's doing something else, NFL offenses are going to make you absolutely pay by taking advantage of that one guy. So that's where the real growth has to come from him. It's just equipping him, teaching him how to use all of those tools at his disposal. That's really what it is.
This is also a very subjective, probably very difficult question, but how long do you expect, like, I'm rephrasing that halfway through. I'm interrupting myself. I don't want to ask how long you expect that to take, because I feel like that's impossible for you to know. How long are you willing to kind of like give him to show that to be, even if for to just see it start coming together?
I think that we'll probably see it start coming together maybe at the end of this year, maybe in training camp next year. Like, I am fully prepared to watch Joshua Kando essentially get a redshirt season in this rotation, because I think the high ceiling is worth waiting on, worth developing. Now, he could surprise me, and he could surprise the Chiefs and everything like that, and immediately be able to come out and contribute, particularly in the dime, when he's not having to react to a run-pass conflict. Basically, he knows that it's going to be a passing play, and he gets to pin his ears back. Those are the situations where I could really see him getting used this year, just basically saying, get out there, let's see what you got. Because that's what they've done with some of those guys in the past. It would make sense. But yeah, if you're starting to see that come along by the end of year one, especially in training camp after year one, I think that you're really going to feel like you've got something there. If you don't see it, maybe by the middle of year two or end of year two, maybe you start questioning whether or not he's going to develop enough within his rookie contract.
Yeah, and I think the other thing there that I'm going to say out loud in hopes of like reminding myself of this is that we don't get to make the real evaluation with the result known in the future. Like, I'm looking back at the 2018 draft for a thing that I'm writing, and getting to Dorian O'Daniel, it's like, it's so disappointing, but at the time I was so, like, that pick made all the sense in the world to me. It's just like this super athletic linebacker that, for whatever reason, never ended up doing anything other than play special teams for Spags, and maybe it goes back to a whole bunch of the other stuff that we talked about around Bolton. But I still think that Kendo is, it makes Kendo creates an interesting swing for all the reasons you explained, and then we hope that it pans out. And also, knowing the coaching that he's going to have, it seems like if he's going to have a situation to fit into, this would be the one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to be fair to, you know, the Breland Speaks and the Tano Passino and the, you know, Dorian O'Daniels that are out there in the world, you know, they were walking into a situation where the defensive coaching staff wasn't as good
yep.
as the one that they have now. Yep. Like, they're the opportunity to maximize these guys, as we've seen. I mean, you talked about the cornerbacks earlier. You couldn't have convinced me that Sam Madison was going to get this group of guys to play like they are,
yeah.
or that Dave Merritt was going to get some of the guys that we kind of written off a little bit to play like they are. So it really is a situation where you have to include all of that stuff. Now, Joshua Kendo was lumped onto the same roster as Breland Speaks with that same coaching staff. I have some questions
yeah.
about development, a lot more than I do now. But because
yeah.
you're putting him in Brendan Daly and Steve Spagnuolo's hands, you start to have a little more optimism that he's going to hit that ceiling.
I think this class ended up having, like, top to bottom, super interesting prospects for a variety of reasons. And we're not going to have time to go through all of them here tonight, which I guess means we're going to have you on again within the next 3 years, which is really, really frustrating.
Oh, man.
I know, I'm pretty bummed about
okay.
it. But I can't let you go without asking about Noah Gray, because I feel like, as much as with Kendo, perhaps, I am still waiting for someone. I'm taking as much information in as I can to try to have as an informed opinion as I can, because I don't know what to think about Noah Gray fully at this point. I feel like I could see a future in which the Chiefs use him in a way that other teams start trying to find their version of him to use in their offense, and then fail and fail again. And I think there's a version of reality where this guy without a position breaking stunningly doesn't really end up having a position in the NFL. So I'll take literally whatever you've got on Noah Gray. Push me in one direction or another and I'll float there.
Okay, I'm going to float you to excited here. You ready?
Yes, I'm so ready. I was really hoping that's what you were going to do.
Use him like Kyle Juszczyk.
Ooh.
Use him in the backfield. Use him as an H-back. Have him get ahead of steam to block, because you don't necessarily want him lining up like a traditional tight end,
right.
because he just, I mean, the will is there,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, the mass at this point in his career, he can certainly put on more. At this point in his career, he just doesn't have that same bulk to be able to drive defensive ends off the line of scrimmage from an inline position. But if you put him as an H-back or as an F, or, you know, line him up as a fullback, which the Chiefs talked about in their post-draft presser, the
mm-hmm.
fact that he can do all of that. Now, all of a sudden, these leak concepts, these screens, these things that we see succeed with Travis Kelce, and teams key off of Travis Kelce so, so much, now you got another guy that's excellent at doing them, and that's an excellent run blocker on the move, and that is able to make things happen in Andy Reid's screen game. Another super smart player, another athletic guy in the open field. He makes so much sense in a misdirection-based run game off of play action. It is crazy. All of these times that you see Kyle Juszczyk wide open in the middle of the field for the San Francisco 49ers offense, because teams are crashing on play action. They're focused on other receivers. We know that teams are going to be focused on Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, ultra focused on them, or having to blitz to try and pick up, you know, try and force the clock for the quarterback. Now you've got this other guy that can win an open space, that can win blocking. There's lots of ways that you can use him in that role. He may only play 35 or 40% of the snaps. Man, those 35 or 40% of the snaps are going to be ultra productive. So I'm really excited about him in this offense. I don't think that it's a like-for-like Kelce replacement.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see a lot more stuff with him on the move, him in the backfield. Just two of them together is going to be very dangerous.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you maybe the hardest question then. This is really, we're really getting into it. Which of these picks are you the least excited about? Because I feel like you've got, like you've probably got something across the board. But where do you go, yeah, I don't know, man, I'm not sure I see this one.
Oh, man, that's a really tough one because overall, on the whole, I probably like this class. I'm probably lower on Nick Bolton, and it is entirely about positional value. It's got nothing to do with the player. Like mm-hmm. I said, I like the linebacker. I just getting a guy that isn't a great coverage linebacker in this group, I get why, but I also wish that there would be a little bit more of a coverage player. I guess if I had to take another swing on somebody, it might be Creed Humphrey, even though I think he's going to start at center for the team day one and probably play mm-hmm. for 4 years on his rookie deal and start for all 4 years. I think we just saw him a little bit at times on the tape and certainly in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl, kind of get walked back a little bit, kind of struggle with power a little bit. So I just have some questions about him. I'm not low on him at all, but I have some questions about him, particularly when we've seen guys in Patrick Mahomes' lap over the past 3 years. You know, obviously, if you're spending that kind of pick, you want it to be anchored, you want it to be good. He certainly could do that day one, though. So I really am pretty happy with these picks. So it's hard to really nitpick them, so I'm nitpicking the first two picks of the draft, and it's solely because of little minor things that aren't really necessarily that much about the players themselves.
If Rudy gets on it, I think by the next segment we could have you saying that you hate Creed Humphrey as a person and that the Chiefs reach on Nick Bolton by like 3 rounds.
I got it.
I hate Nick Bolton and I hate him because he's a Missouri Tiger. I don't like that. I don't like you having that in your Rolodex, Rudy. I feel silly that we've gotten here. We'll go real quick lightning round. Everybody likes Trey Smith, especially at 226. Yes?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Easy.
Ultra high upside. Easy. Yes.
Tell me about Cornell Powell, what you think he could do year one, what you think he could do year two or three.
Physical, X-type receiver, does all the little things well, excellent run blocker, excellent route runner, doesn't have top-end athleticism, but great hands. He is, a Jason Avant-type Andy Reid X receiver, perfect complement to Tyreek Hill.
Jason Avant is a fun pro comp. I like that a lot, actually. Have you ever thought about doing this professionally?
He's that guy. No. Do you know a guy? Somebody that can hook me up with something?
Okay, I know of a new network that people can check out, kcsportsnetwork.com. You can follow at kcsportsnetwork on Twitter as well. It's Craig. I'm not even going to say the name of one of the other people that you said earlier because he has not fully been resurrected to this show yet, but we'll see if that changes soon. But an incredible crew there with guys like BJ Kissel, Matt Derrick, literally a list too long to get through before Rudy makes me take a break. Craig, I am so very happy to have you back in our radio lives, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Are you free tomorrow?
I'm free tomorrow and 3 years from now.
All right. Well, we'll pick a spot somewhere between those two signposts, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
Craig Stout at Barley Hop on Twitter. I just feel like I'm glowing. I'm just so glad to have him back. And this segment, I think, ultimately posterity will remember much better than the last one.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
If this show was decent all the time, it'd be a better show.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Craig Stout. So glad to have him back around. Also, by the way, I missed this earlier, and then I wanted to come back and mention it, and I may have to their Twitch username. Maybe they're still here. Still here, XD on Twitch, subscribed to the Sports Radio 810 Twitch channel, which I very much appreciate. And then also got this comment from them that I enjoyed. This is my time filler while stationed in Korea. Sports talk or random topics. I love this show. Thank you. Still here, XD, for listening from Korea. It's pretty cool. I think this was established at one point back in the ESPN Kansas City days, but AES, an international success.
And almost entirely
international. Global.
I was trying to think of
Korean.
Essentially an international Korean. Word for S, you know? But what's another, what's an S word?
Almost entirely socially, politically aware. There's a lot of hyphens on that one.
it works though.
I tried to get here. So that's great. Love that. I'm seeing if there's anything else that popped up on the Twitch. I do think that, even though I have a personal vendetta against Nick Bolton, and I think he should be deported and not allowed to play American football, I guess, just based on, I gotta say this. And some, listen, there are some people within, you know, earshot right now from our various platforms that are Mizzou people that I think are giving me an extra portion of dookie along with my Nick Bolton conversations. And I, you know, if it's all in good fun, it's all in good fun. But there are some people who are genuinely so mad at me for things I absolutely haven't said. And it's just, could we all please take a breath? Anyway, we can't take a breath. It's not going to happen. But I think Craig's angle on it, even as he's saying, you know, the positional value there is still a bit of a bummer, is still sort of maybe the least exciting of the picks. I do think that the future vision of having him and Willie Gay playing next to each other, where maybe he can get into that wheel roll and base packages a little bit this year, and also maybe he's getting out there in the nickel packages on some level. Right now, if they can all share a little bit of space in the base, but you get a Hitchens Gay sub package, and then you hope that the nickel package, or the dime package, eventually ends up featuring Willie Gay over Ben Neiman, you do find yourself having just like a wealth of talent at the position right now. Is that a talent you need, a position you need all that talent at for that premium? Maybe, maybe not. I think that creates a pretty interesting future. And also, I do think it's good to keep in mind, this is something I'm sure I'll repeat many times over going forward. If you're going to have a position to overspend at specifically for a Spags defense, you want to have a guy that thinks and plays sort of like Anthony Hitchens, because being able to have everything under one guy's umbrella with the green dot in the back of his helmet, if that is something that is especially valuable to Spags, it's something you may eventually need to overspend on. And his trade-off there is going to be, hey, let's invest in safety, and we're going to get more out of it than other teams would. We're not going to have to invest in corner the same way, because we've got this handled. Maybe the edge rusher position, you give us some guys, you give us some athletic freaks that we can mold a little bit, we're going to get you value there as well. The place that we're going to ask you to pay a little more than, if you're talking to Veach or Reed or Clark Hunt, is at that Mike linebacker spot of a guy who can really sort of cement the middle of the defense and also the defense around him in his orbit in some way. That's a trade-off I'm willing to sign up for. I think it's fine. It's also still like, I want a De'Ami Brown at 53 or 58 or 58. I want a De'Ami Brown at 15, all right? Or Terrace Marshall Jr. That's what I wanted. I'm not going to apologize for that. But I am sorry.
Don't apologize.
I won't. I unapologize.
I was not mad when the Chiefs drafted Nick Bolton. I was a little bummed because, again, I just there were receivers there, and I viewed receivers as a more pressing need for now, and honestly, even some for the future, because as we know, like Andy Reid's shown this throughout his entire career of not just drafting, and obviously like Brett Veach, GM, I do believe Andy Reid has like kind of like. Andy Reid is the ultimate power in the Chiefs organization, but I think Andy Reid's even learned from his time when he was running all the Eagles things.
Absolutely.
That I do not want to do all this.
100%.
I do believe he trusts Brett Veach and lets Brett Veach do the stuff, and a lot, and he trusts. But I believe Brett Veach has some of the same philosophies Andy Reid does, because it would make sense because he came up under Andy Reid.
Yep.
And Andy Reid's philosophy in Philadelphia was not just drafting for now, it was drafting for the future. And I wish off the top of my head I could remember. I just remember it was Sheldon Brown, there was another corner, and they drafted two corners like in the second and third round, mm-hmm. and they had Troy Vincent, and everybody was asking, well, why? Well, you know, why would you draft corners early when you have two all-pro corners? And it was like, well, because in two years from now, these guys are not going to really be here.
Right.
Troy Vincent was still there, but he was now playing free safety because he can no longer play corner, and Sheldon Brown, and I wish I could remember the other corner, were starting for him.
I'm not going to bail you out on that one. I want you to know.
It's not loading. It's not, yeah. I think we've had this conversation recently,
and it's still not loading.
And I always remember Sheldon Brown.
No retention.
I never remembered the other guy. Another guy was pretty good, but this is part of Andy Reid's philosophy. And again, like, it makes sense. Like, this is a Spags pick, you know, to some extent, obviously. But it also makes sense that Spags, again, have this philosophy would be throughout the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. And it's like a little, but it's still like a little disappointing to me that they didn't go after receiver. But, you know, we've seen there are plenty of things where before Spags got here where I just, and I think you as well, where I would have disagreed in terms of value of positions. And so far, he's proven me wrong every step of the way for the most part, right?
Maybe not proving
wrong is necessarily the right word, because yeah. I still think corner is more... It's still highly valuable, but he's shown that you can make it work, right? Like he's shown, yeah, at least in his system, maybe in every other system, corner is it probably is way more valuable. But at the very least in his system, it's not at, right? Like, you can work with lesser talent,
yeah,
and get more out of it. Like, he has shown me time after time after time that this way works to some degree.
Yeah, no, 100%. I especially the corner thing is the one where I still
want Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, well, not
that,
right now.
That type of corner, yes, right? Yeah.
It's the thing that I still wonder about in two different ways, specifically corner. I wonder about it in terms of, is the success they've had with this strategy sustainable? And also I wonder, is that actually, like, is that ever going to break? Not in terms of even performance, but in terms of their choices. Is there going to be a circumstance when they say, you know what, here's a chance where we we'll have to invest in a corner that we really, really like at a reasonable cost? What will they do? I really don't know. I don't know if they're going to say forever, you know, we're just going to take dudes on rookie deals. Whenever Ward hits free agency next offseason, we're not going to pay him. Bashaud Breeland, maybe he's finally, I don't know this to be true, maybe he's finally really putting his foot down and saying, I'm not signing with anybody for less than a 2 or a 3 year deal. Maybe the Chiefs are saying, all right, cool, it's just not going to be with us. I don't know if that is a hard and fast rule, or if that's a place where you say, hey, what can I get by without right now? If you've ever budgeted anything, you know what that's like. You say, well, listen, I need gas in my car to get to work so I can get money to pay for gas in my car. So maybe this week I'll cancel my Netflix subscription, or maybe maybe I'm going to work with the food I've already got in the pantry, or I'm not going to hit up a drive-thru at any point. You know, we've all had some version, yeah, of that, right?
Yeah, we have all, or at least the people who are listening who are, I would say, our age or younger, have recently, older, yeah, people have at some point in their life, but recently have had to starve because it was financially what we had to do.
So I don't know if the Chiefs are in a spot for a position like corner where they say, well, I would still like to go through a drive-thru for lunch every day, but it's not on the budget right now. Or if they say, no, I really like ramen. I will just eat ramen forever, and I'll spend that money on something else whenever I have a chance to. I really don't know. But I also think this draft is interesting for exactly that reason, because it's a reinvestment in the linebacker position. It's a reinvestment in another experimental edge for Spags. And also, I called an audible partway through there, because this is something we'll just talk to Craig about in the many, 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 many weeks of offseason we'll have coming up. It'll even feel longer than it actually is. I'm curious how he feels about the edge position as a whole right now for the Chiefs, because Frank Clark is still... I think he's going to be the biggest question going into this season. We haven't spent all that much time talking about him over the course of the offseason, because we've been talking about the draft and new players and exiting players and all of that. But I think he's probably the guy right now that has the highest variance among veterans on this team that could make the biggest or most outsized impact, or be underwhelming and cost a lot while being underwhelming still. But even behind him, the depth there is fascinating. So there'll be a lot of good questions to keep asking for the future. We'll ask none of those. We talked to David Leskey about the Royals next.